Because it's always a battle of authority. It's always a battle of authority. So in verse 13 through 24, we're not going to read all this. Moshe sits to hear the needs and the petitions of the people. They came to seek. Now, this is another thing. They're coming to seek Elohim, it says. All right? But where do they go to seek Elohim? The anointed appointed. I mean, this is the structure of Scripture. You can argue all you want. You can claim that somehow when Messiah came, it changed everything. Yahweh doesn't change. Messiah doesn't change. So it's a really weak argument. Okay? So in verse 13, came to be on the next day that Moses sat right to rightly rule the people, and the people stood from before Moshe from morning until evening. That sounds like the hours we work. I'm just looking over at Elder. Okay? And when the father-in-law of Moshe saw all of this, he said, what is this you're doing? Okay? For the people. Notice he's doing it for the people. Okay? Why do you sit by yourself and all the people stand before you morning until evening? And Moses said, because the people come to me to seek Elohim. Because you know what Moses is at this point? The voice of Elohim. Elohim does speak to the people through people. Not just anybody, specific anointed people. And then the people are supposed to seek that person to get what they are needing from when they're seeking Elohim. That's your scriptural understanding that's being laid out here. The structure that gets laid out, we've got a lot of things laid out here early on, like the heads of thousands, heads of hundreds. That's a very military sort of structure. You see it here, but you know what? You go into the military, you see it there too. You know, you've got companies and battalions and platoons and all these structures that have various sizes to them, right? Now, so Moses is saying, look, when they have a matter, they come to me and I rightly rule between one and another and make known the laws of Elohim and his instructions regarding whatever it is their issue is, their Torah. And by the way, it doesn't necessarily say that they're all halachic issues. As a matter of fact, it probably isn't any halachic issues at this point because the halacha had not been given yet. They were slaves all this time. They haven't gotten to Sinai yet. So they've learned a few halachic things up to this point. They've learned Shabbat, right? Because remember the manna and everything. So they learned Shabbat. They learned really the first four commandments. They learned that Yahweh was above. First of all, they learned the commandment one, I am Yahweh who brought you out of Egypt. And then two, you shall have no Elohim above me. And three, don't make any idols. Well, two is really the idols. Three is don't take my name and make it nothing. All right? Don't have anyone above me. Don't make an idol. And then three, don't take my name. And then four, of course, is the Sabbath, right? So they actually learn those four before they get to Sinai. But he's got people saying, I'm having a problem in this situation or with this person. Or I don't know what to do. And they're looking for his, Elohim's, right ruling coming out of Moses' mouth on what to do. How do we handle this thing going on between us? Isn't that what you guys come to us for? All the time. Well, the ones of you do. Some of you never do. All right? So he's explaining to his father-in-law, look, they're coming to me to seek Elohim, and they bring a matter to me, and they come to me, and I rightly rule. And so father-in-law says, what you're doing is not good. Not that what he was doing was not good, the way he was going about it by himself. All right? What he was doing was good. He says, both you and these people with you shall certainly wear yourselves out, for the matter is too heavy for you. You're not able to do it yourself. In other words, he's saying, look, I don't care how good you are. You handling all this on your own is too much. Okay? And look, I mean, he's giving guidance for that, and I would appreciate that if, you know, understanding the guidance. Look, that is why I'm so excited to have Rabbi Tom and Elder Billy. Because they do handle a lot of calls, as he mentioned today during the prayer time. He said, I'm not just giving you this and this. You got to talk to Rabbi first. Sometimes I'll screen you this way. I'm not going to send you to Rabbi at all, okay? But there's other help going on. It's not just me having to handle everything. Although ultimately, it's under my authority and my guidance. I'm responsible. And so I will often get a contact. As a matter of fact, all my contacts from Rabbi Tom are almost always, this situation came up and I wasn't sure this is what I was going to say, but I need you to approve it. I need you to give me your guidance. Anything he's confident in, he handles himself. Elder the same way, okay? So he says, this is not good. He says, listen to my voice, verse 19. Let me counsel you and Elohim be with you. Stand before Elohim for the people, and you shall bring the matters to Elohim. And you shall enlighten them concerning the laws and the Torah and show them the way in which they should walk and the work that they should do. Wait a minute, Elder, did you hear that? We could talk to them about the work they should do. How do they know we need to counsel people about that? He says, but you yourself seek out from all the people, able men who fear Elohim, men of truth, hating unfair gain, and place these over them to be rulers of thousands, hundreds, fifties, rulers of tens, etc. Okay? So these are the people with authority over these various sized groups. All right? And of course, I think it's, if you understand the military, okay, the person who's head over 10 is part of the group that the guy who's head over 50. The guy who's head over 50 is part of the group that's head over whatever. They're all part of the next bigger group, okay? So there's somebody in higher authority that has more responsibility with people underneath down the vertical who are handling things at a smaller group level, okay? And then it gets elevated and escalated up as needed, right? So he's trying to help. He says, do this, okay? They shall rightly rule the people at all times, and it shall be that they bring every greater matter to you, but they themselves rightly rule all the small things. So to make it lighter for yourself, and they shall bear with you. If you do this word, and Elohim shall command you, then you shall be able to stand, and all these people also go to their place in peace. And so Moshe listened to the voice of his father and did all that he did, that he said. He was open to hear guidance and wisdom, okay? Contrary to what you may believe, I do actually listen to guidance and wisdom. It just, if you notice, it mattered who it came from. This was, number one, his father-in-law, who had a very close relationship with him. Number two, this was someone who understood the job, okay? And so you got to be careful who you listen to, and you got to be careful who you're expecting me to listen to. Okay? Because a lot of you will contact me and think, I need to listen to you. A, I have no relationship with you, and B, you have never done my job, so you really don't know what you're talking about in that context, okay? So why would I listen? Okay? Now, I still may listen to the words, and there might be something in there I could do something with, but I'm just saying is your expectation that I would submit to or listen to your guidance, instruction, whatever you say I should do, you got to understand, I've given you the same guidance. Why would you listen to anybody you don't have a proper relationship with who isn't in a proper vertical place of understanding and experience to give you guidance in the first place? Like all of you that get your financial advice from other broke people. And you do. It's amazing how many, you will talk to all your other broke friends about money, but you won't talk to anybody who's not broke about money. You know. And that doesn't make any sense. So Moses recognized, my father-in-law is a wise man. I've lived with him all those years, right? Remember when he got together with his wife and they were together for a bunch of years? I know what he's about. I know what his character is. I know how he feels about me. And he absolutely understands the job I'm trying to do, at least in a smaller scale. I don't believe that Yitro was dealing with 2 million people. Because it was 2 to 3 million of them. When you consider when they do the census in numbers, it's 603,000 men over the age of 20. That doesn't count anybody younger than 20. Doesn't count any of the women. You add that all together, you got at least another three times as many people. And so, you know, that's got to be close to 2-3 million people. Okay? And so he was dealing with a lot. And there was logic here. Now, by the way, let's be careful with this piece. He says, you yourself seek out from the people able men who fear Elohim, men of truth, hating unfair gain. I'm not really worried about the unfair gain part because I don't see mostly the people that I would interact with doing this trying to get something gain-wise. I know there's a lot of that in the churches. You know, people accuse me of that. I don't know why. We are so transparent and so over, you know, meticulously watched over and audited everything else, I have no idea. But that being said, the other characteristics are so key. Some of you think, oh, why wouldn't he pick this person or that person? It has to be someone who's an able man. Why don't we just start off with man? I've got a lot of boys out there. Don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me. Look in the mirror and own it. Okay? I don't care how much beard you have, if you still barely have some peach fuzz, because you might be a boy. I'm not talking about the actual facial hair. You understand what I'm trying to say? All right? Able men, capable men, responsible men. Which is why, what does Paul tell in Timothy? He says, look for somebody who's a man. How did he word it? Someone who's got his house in order and has he actually got his life together. I mean, if his life is a disaster, how's he going to lead anybody? I mean, that's another way of just saying, look for able men. He gave a little bit more detail of what he thought an able man would look like, but I'm just saying it's really just looking for able men, all right? Who fear Elohim. What does fear of Elohim look like? Remember, I did the whole teaching, fear of Yahweh. It means that, are they Torah observant? Do they concern themselves with the matters above, above the matters below? Are they afraid of things below? Because if they are, they're not fearing Elohim, right? Okay, these are all factors in picking these men before you so quickly think, why don't I pick this one or that one or you? Whatever you think you are, right? Are you an able man? Do you fear Elohim? Okay, fearing Elohim doesn't mean, well, I believe in Messiah and I believe in Torah, but what do you do with that? That demonstrates your fear of Elohim, okay? And why do you need to have the fear of Elohim? Because the fear of Elohim is the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge, and the beginning of understanding. So that's where it starts. If you don't have that, you got nothing. You got nothing. All right? So last thing it says, men of truth. We need to do a whole teaching just on that one of these days. What's the truth? You can't handle the truth. But we're told to rightly handle Messiah, rightly handle the word. But you can't handle it. Certainly not rightly handling it most of the time. Well, I shouldn't say most of the time, at least some of the time. I mean, I watch people who claim to be all Sabbath keeping, this keeping, and I find them doing stuff that's like, but that's not something you do on Shabbat. You know? There's so much that we watch being done. And so I would say he was going to have a little bit of a time. It's a good thing he was doing it out of 2-3 million people because he had to find men who feared Elohim that were men of truth. Who weren't seeking power for themselves and gain, right? Some sort of gain. Wanting. See, some of you, I don't mean necessarily in this room, but some of you out there who are looking for, I want to be in charge, I want to be a leader. You want it because you want what you think you gain by that. Okay? I think stress is what she said. That's right. Okay? I don't know how. Maybe we should do like a ministry reality TV so you can know what. It'd be so embarrassing. Because you would not believe what we deal with. But you don't know what you're asking. Because you don't ask in knowledge, you ask in ignorance. You just don't know what we do. You see us doing some of what we do, but you don't get to see all of it. And you don't know what it feels like, the unrelenting part of it. You just have no idea what it's like to have this be. Your phone doesn't ring at 11 o'clock at night with people asking questions or later. Okay? Mine does. I don't know why people still think they have my number, but they do. And elders does. Okay? And sometimes, well, almost never, but sometimes there are emergencies. Okay? At least to you think it is anyway. To you, it's an emergency. What I'm just saying is the job is 24/7. See, if you're used to 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are, and then you go home, forget it. That's not this. Okay? All right? Look, I already worked more than an 8-hour day today, and I'm here still working. Okay? And if we had a zone 3, like we will next week, I'd be working for another 2 hours till midnight after this is done. And look, I actually try very hard to allow that I'm the only one that has to deal with this, so I try not to bother Elder or Rabbi Tom when they are off the clock, so to speak. I really do. But it's not always possible. Sometimes I need them to understand something that's going on or bring something to their awareness so that if it comes up and they get, I need to sometimes, and they need to be available. Okay? This is not, it's beyond what you think an hourly is, and it's beyond what you think a salary is. This is ministry. And some of you think you want to be in ministry. You don't understand ministry. You have to put everybody first all the time. All the time. And you end up saying yes to a lot of stuff you'd rather not, but you need to because it's just the right thing to do. You know, and in the things that I deal with and he did, and we all, the leadership deals with, like I said, I'm not saying this to brag at all. He says it. You have no idea the patience that it takes to do this job. Okay? And he'll look at me a lot of times going, man, you're so patient. And some of you are thinking, really? Because you don't see it. All you hear is this, okay? But you don't see it in application, in the actual one-on-one situations. Because without it, I couldn't do any of that. And none of you would stay. And it all, because you have to have incredible patience. And by the way, I do not claim to have that. He gives it to me in the moment. I am not actually a very patient person. But I tend to only show that in my own life, dealing with my own stuff. When it comes to you, the rock kicks in. And so, on the one hand, Elder may see me losing my mind with impatience over something. On the other hand, it's something I'm dealing with myself. But then when it comes to you, all of a sudden, the gear shifts, and we're in a whole another place, and the patience level is, you know, bottomless or without limit, okay? It's just there. All right? But that's the job. And so Moses had to find that quality of a person. And some of you say, well, how come you don't have more people doing? He picked, do you know how many he picked as far as like when the anointing went on? How many did he pick or get that anointing? 70. Take out a calculator and divide 70 into by 2 million or 3 million, doesn't matter. It's going to be a number with a lot of zeros to the right of the decimal point. You're going to have all the zeros. It's an incredibly small number, okay? Yes, you got like what, 4 or 5 zeros and then a 3, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 4 zeros and then a 3, all right? And think of what percentage that is, okay? It's such a small percentage. Okay? Or just divide 2 million by 70. Okay? Go ahead, she's doing it now. Divide 2 million by 70. What do you get?
28,000.
Okay, 28,500 and change. That means that he found one person for every 28,500 people. Okay? We don't have 28,000 people, so how do I even have one? I think we're doing great. Okay, because we've got two or three really good people here, all right, in terms of leadership. I mean, I got two tremendously amazing people, an elder and a Rabbi Tom, and we don't have 28,000 people. He one out of 28,500 people. And people are all like, how come you don't have more people? I have a very small pool to fish in, to search through, okay? What are you expecting? All right? Elder told me he was in a church at one time. It had a pastor and this pastor and that pastor, sister pastor. But how many people were in the church, though? 3,000, okay? We have not even 200 people here on a weekly basis. And you've got two rabbis and an elder? I think we're doing amazing. Okay? Just saying. All right? Because I remember the first time I did that math, and I was like, wow. I'm not just talking about the people that were picked for the heads of thousands, because some of that was administrative, okay, to some degree. But when the anointing actually got shared, it was only 70 out of all those people. Okay, some of you might say, okay, but you're counting all 2-3 million. All right, so take the 70 and divide 603,550, which is the men over 20, and see what you get. It's still less than 10%, or less than less than 1%. What is it? It's when you divided seven, when you divided. Divide 603,550 by 70. 603,550 divided by 70. Okay, so it's 8, what does it say? Okay, so that means that 1 out of 8,600 of the men, because remember when they do the census, it's 603,550. Why do I remember the number? I've done this enough years, okay? 1 out of 8,600. One for every 8,600 people. That's if you're just counting the men, which is reasonable, right? Why would you count the children and everybody else? Okay, so you're counting just the men who are over 20 years old. Still, it's one over, it's one out of, one for every 8,600 plus people. You know, remnant, you know that word? The whomsoever wills, the, you know, you look at the 144,000, that sounds like a big number. Not when you look at all the people that ever lived. Okay, if that's what it's talking about. Who knows what it's talking about? Wouldn't surprise me if that's literally from all the people that ever lived. You get 144,000, because you take the billions that lived compared to the millions only got you 70. Well, then the billions only get you 144,000. Wow. There you go. I talked about eschatology for 5 seconds. Okay, quoted Revelation 7. There you go. You're excited now. All right, look. Where do you fit into all this? Where are you going to be standing? You know, I hate to sound like the Christian song, but which number are you going to stand in? I'll be standing in that number, like when the saints come marching, whatever. I mean, what number are you standing in? Are you going to stand up and be in the that small percentage that are going to be these things? Trustworthy, fearing Elohim, men of truth, women of truth, just anybody who's going to be able and of truth. Fearing Elohim. Yeah, it's going to be a small number. Because it's a high standard he's setting. Now, by high standard, I'm not saying it's going to be a small number because people can't do it. I'm saying because people, to hit a standard that high, will just choose not to. Okay? And how do I know that? Don't get mad at me. Because look at your life. Look at the standard you've held yourself to up to this point. I don't think I'm being mean or rude. Let's be honest with ourselves. Why would I believe, if I'm him, that you're going to keep some high standard that you've not demonstrated up to this point? Really think about it. That's a pretty scary thought. I want you to be really honest with yourself. What kind of standard do you hold yourself to in being able, capable, functioning properly in your life, fearing Elohim, and being a person of truth? By the way, person of truth means that you're dealing with the reality of your life as opposed to some delusional spin you want to convince yourself of. Truth is not just talking about Torah, not just talking about Yeshua, it's talking about truth in general. These men, to do their job, need to be grounded in truth, which is the reality of what they were in. And a lot of you don't want to live in the real world. Well, I mean, we really, none of us want to. But I'm saying you don't want to actually deal with, this is where you are. We're in the below. It sucks. People suck. This is terrible. It's hard. But you have to deal with it. And you have to deal with it at an incredibly high standard. But by the way, the standard is not measured by how much money is in the bank. So it's not about, you know, meeting somebody else. It's about, are you doing the best that you can? Doing the most with what you have? Aiming as high as you can? Trying as hard as you can? Being diligent? Being responsible? Being trustworthy? I'm talking about a standard that's completely has nothing to do with your particular status in lifestyle, okay? There's a lot of people in the world, well, I'll say whatever percentage is, who have very much less lifestyle than you, that have a much higher standard than you do. Not standard of living, but standard as people. And they have more integrity, and they're making the most of what little they have. And I'm sorry if you feel like I'm picking on you. I just want you to know what you're up against. Look, you've Well, if you've been listening to me, you haven't had this problem. But if you've been listening to anybody else all your life, they've all blown a bunch of smoke up your skirt. Okay? They have. They've been just blowing that smoke. I mean, really, they're trying to get you to get secondhand high or something because they want you to believe this fantasy instead of understand the reality. Okay? And you have two realities that you need to deal with. The reality of living this life in this world, and the reality that, based on that, will determine what you end up with next, which we'll be covering either tomorrow or the next session, okay? In part 9 or 10 of the teaching. But those are your two realities, the reality of now and the reality of what's coming. And by the way, now will determine where you end up and then what's coming. But you were lied to about all that your whole life. And it will not be measured by your bank account. It'll be measured by how well you did with what you had, right? Don't you see when they have the parable of the talents? What do you do with what you have? That's why those parables are there, so you can understand your life in the context of all of this is what effort did you make to do the best, most with what you have? And do not compare yourself to somebody that may have more. More is expected, right? To whom he gave more, he expected more. And don't be insulted if he gave you less. Do the most with what you have. It will get you to the same place as the person with more who does the most with what he has. And if you don't do the most, either one of you, it doesn't matter how you started, are still going to end up with less. You have to do the most with what you have. I mean, I know that this may be beating something to death here, but I think that we skip over this too quickly to understand that Moses was being asked to find a very hard to find group of men. But thankfully for him, he had a really large pool to try to find them in. And by the way, we see them go scouting out the land, and guess what? They turn out to be not such a great group of men. So don't be all shocked if leadership, and I've had plenty of this in my history, picking certain people for authority positions who end up blowing up and imploding and not being the best choice. Okay? I've had it happen to me plenty. Moses has it happen to him here. All right? These people are picked when they go to spy out the land. They're picked for being men of renown representing the tribes. These are leaders or the sons of leaders, okay, of those tribes. So no, they weren't actually the leaders, but they were the sons of the leaders. Okay? You son of a leader. Okay? That's what Moses was thinking when they were so bad at it, the 10 of them. All right, look. They did not pass the test. I've had lots of people that I've had in ministry, elders that I've had, and et cetera, that have been in our ministry, under me in the vertical, who turned out not to be what I had hoped they would be. Okay, so by the way, that's not a judgment necessarily on me. I can only do what I can do with what I have at the time. Moses thought he picked the best possible guys, did the best effort he could. Okay, and still only a 2 out of the 12 ended up being what they needed to be. What was the difference in the two? The two were able men, fearing Elohim, men of truth. Oh, only 2 of them were that way. The other 2 feared the giants and feared all the other stuff that was going on. Only 2 of them weren't afraid because they were fearing Elohim. Okay? Where does belief fit in this? These are men of belief. If they don't believe, then you're not going to do the other stuff. Okay? Why would you fear Elohim unless you believed in him and him? Like you believe him, what he says, and you believe in him, like who he is and what he is. Otherwise, there's nothing. Why would you fear him? You fear him because you know who he is. And I think that the other 10 of the 12 really didn't know who he was. They hadn't fully embraced it. Joshua and Caleb did. The other ones did not. All right? I know that's a lot to say here at the beginning, but this is really, really important. Okay? Now, in verses 18 and 19, okay, we understand this is Moses' role, okay? Okay, his role, well, leading up to that, really verses 15 and 16, okay, is that the people are going to come to him. His role is to try to give the right ruling. By the way, we see this then extrapolate out into a structure in Deuteronomy 17. Okay? When we get there, you'll see that, where Deuteronomy lays out the vertical structure, okay, of when a matter arises that's too hard for you to handle, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't that exactly what Moses is being told here? All right, that's Deuteronomy 17, beginning in verse 8. All right? Then you go to the anointed, appointed leadership. But let's connect this dot to what Moses is doing here. There's an expectation that the people listen. You know, in Deuteronomy 17, it says, you are to do according to the Torah in which they instruct you, according to the right ruling which they say to you. This is verse 11. Do not turn to the right or the left. He says, any man who acts arrogantly as to not listen to the priest who stands to serve there before Yahweh your Elohim, or to the judge, that man shall die. That's pretty serious stuff. And calls you arrogant when you don't listen. Oh, but what makes you think you're one of those? Nothing. What makes you think I'm not, or what makes you think I am? It's on you, not on me. I know what I am. I don't have any doubt. Doesn't matter what I think, though. What matters is what you think. Okay? And if you believe that I have an anointed, appointed role, and then don't listen, that's a problem for you. Not a problem for me. Well, I guess it's a problem for me too, because it gets really frustrating and annoying to have to constantly deal with the same stuff because you don't listen. Okay? And as patient as I am, I get a little impatient with that. And at some point I say, stop coming. Until you go ahead and do whatever that I ask you. If you're not going to do what I ask you, then just stop coming. What am I wasting my voice for? Okay? But if you're going to listen, come as often as you need to. And some people do actually come pretty often, but they listen and they get results and they grow, you know? All right, so back here in Exodus, we're still in 18, okay? So the role of the anointed appointed in verse 20 says, and you shall enlighten them concerning what Yahweh said, basically, the laws and the instructions from above. You shall enlighten them and show them the way in which they should walk and the work they will do. So for those you will say, well, I don't know why we have a rabbi about this, because that's actually the role. Okay? That is the role as expressed here in the scripture. And by the way, don't tell me about the priesthood, which hasn't existed yet. This is Moses being told. So this was not at least not a Levitical priesthood issue. I believe it was a Melchizedekian priesthood issue, and that he was a Melchizedekian priest. Okay? Because the functions that he did were along those lines, which were to make right ruling and judgments and instructions in Torah. Okay? The Levitical priests were there to do judicial, in other words, the court system judging, and to do temple service. All right? So the Melchizedekian priest might tell you, look, if you see a little thing on your skin, you need to go talk to the priest. Then the priest gets to decide what's going on with your skin. Okay? But you may ask somebody like a Melchizedekian elder, I don't know what to do. I got this thing on my skin. Well, you need to go see the priest. All right? Because that's their job. My job is to tell you whose job it is, who to go to, and make sure you're doing all the right things that way. That's what the Melchizedekian person would be doing. In case you're wondering what the 70 were doing. They weren't doing the same things the Leviticals were doing. They were speaking the word of Yahweh with authority. In other words, when you would ask, they would say, this is what the word of Yahweh says with authority. This is the authority in this situation. All right? Then also in verse 21 and 22, when it talks about seeking these able men, who's seeking the men? Moses, right? So please understand, all of you out there trying to self-anoint, self-appoint, this verse helps us to see that it's the anointed, appointed, selects and anoints and appoints. Okay? You don't get to select yourself. All right? And so I have my eyes open. So does Elder. So does Rabbi Tom. And we're keeping our eyes out to see if anybody has any of those giftings that we can then point to and anoint and appoint, so to speak, okay? But the selecting is done by the one who's already in the position, who actually understands the position and knows what it's going to take. Look, I knew, all right? I'm not taking any credit like it was me. He gave me insight to know that Elder would be what he is right now with you guys. The first time I ever saw him. And he hadn't really done enough to really, I didn't even know him. But that inspiration was given to me to say, this may be one, keep an eye on him, so to speak, okay? I didn't even tell him until after he was already here. And still, he was here not working for me. He was here to have another job and do other things. I already knew what I was expecting would ultimately play out, but I needed to see more things to verify. Here's the important part. I wanted to make sure it wasn't me, but it was him. All right? Because in the past, I made a bunch of choices that were me because it was expedient for me to put someone in a position because it helped me, at least I thought it would, to have somebody to offload certain burdens to who happened to drop the ball, a few of them, over the years. Okay? But I made those choices because it was expedient to me, starting with the very first person who made an elder who ended up blowing up in my face and tried to crush the whole congregation 12 years ago. All right? And a few elders since then. And even some that I didn't make elders, because I felt like if I make someone an elder, it's going to really blow up. I was just too much me and not enough being patient. Remember, I told you, I'm not always patient with my stuff. Patient with your stuff, not with my stuff. And so I knew what I was probably going to offer elder. I just didn't tell him until after he was here for a little while, struggling, and because I also told him on his way here not to take the job he was taking. Wasn't that nice of me? He had packed up everything, had a job lined up and everything. And while he's driving, I said, no. And it wasn't because I was planning to give him one. I just thought it was the wrong job for him. And I gave him reasons, okay? But you know what he did? He listened. He trusted because he knew why he was coming down here, okay? But that's the way it's supposed to work. Now, I was very blessed with Rabbi Tom because he came already as a rabbi and happened to also have an actual anointing. We had a few other rabbis come over the years. Not so good. Thankfully, not with us anymore either. And most of that happened before any of you ever were a part of this. So you don't even know who I'm talking about, okay? That goes back almost 12 years now. Okay, it goes a long time back. But it's funny because one of them told Rabbi Tom he needed to listen to my teachings, and that connected us together, even though that person is not here anymore. But their job was to connect Rabbi Tom here, okay? That's what it seemed like in 2020 hindsight, okay? So he was a rabbi friend of Rabbi Tom, so at least they knew each other, and he said, hey, you got to check out this guy, and he did, and then they were both coming for a while, and then there was one, right? Okay, so... But just keep that in mind. Okay, this is how, I mean, this is the first place law first mentioned, right? We talk about that sometimes, that the first place something happens, it's important for us to really glean out of it. This is the first place you see structure being put in, you know, big structure being put in place. You don't see this with Abraham or with Isaac or with Jacob. Now, they had structure, I mean, with their, all these people with them, but they don't tell us about it. We just know that there was a head. It was either Abraham, and then it was Isaac, then it was Jacob. We don't see anything in detail. Here, actual structures being put in place. Heads of people. Oh, wait a minute. That means that you had someone over you that you needed to listen to and submit to. They had authority. Look, I know I say this on a regular basis. Man, we are not going to cover so much of this today, but anyway. I know I say this on a regular basis, okay? But you got to really hear this out. I know on a regular basis I tell you that the book is a battle between fear and doubt and trust and belief. But there's a second battle happening in conjunction with that. And that is submission, sovereignty, and authority. Okay? He puts all this in place to see if you can give up your sovereignty willingly, because you recognize and trust a higher sovereignty. All right? And so he's putting authority in place. Now, this was not going to go easy, which is why we're going to see all the rebellions, because a bunch of slaves who are now free are like, oh, I've already done with masters. Okay? All of you have had that same problem in some type and shadow because you've had bad authority in your life. And so a lot of you got to the point, oh, nobody's going to be in charge of me. You can forget about that. I'm done with that. Okay? Well, that's not going to work for him. So you're going to have to learn how to trust and submit to authority that you choose to voluntarily submit to. Okay? This isn't Pharaoh. Nobody's forcing you to do anything. He's trying to show you the features and benefits of yielding to his will and trusting his guidance and leadership. And you either see it or you don't. But then you have to also trust that he does this working through people. Not everybody, specific. Paul calls it the fivefold. Well, he actually never says that phrase. He lists five things in Ephesians 4, all right, 4:11, and we all know the verse, to give us an idea of some of those roles that we are supposed to have in authority. But he talks about them as anointed and appointed. He says, these are people that have a role to play in your life in bringing all of us into the unity of belief. Do we have unity of belief in the body right now? I mean, it's not even close. It is not. The body believes, let's just talk about the Torah observant messianic part of the body. The body out there that claims to appreciate Torah, that it's legitimate, and believes that Yeshua is Messiah, do we all believe the same stuff about everything? We don't even believe the stuff about almost anything. Okay? There's very little we agree on. I know a lot of people out there, well, we agree on most things. No, we don't. Okay? You're being dishonest. Okay? Because we don't. You know. And, you know, people will tell me all the time, you know, well, you know, if first time they found me, whatever, and I say, well, have you heard the teachings? They're like, why? And I say, because they're different. What's different? I'm not going to teach anything the way you've heard it before. Almost anything. Okay? I mean, how much of the stuff that you heard me teach, you said like, oh yeah, that's exactly how I always thought of it. Okay? I mean, some of you did come to some of the conclusions I did about certain things and said, oh, finally someone teaching it, but you certainly didn't hear anybody else teach it. And again, this is no bragging or anything, it's just this is different. So then we're not yet getting into that unity thing, and that's because we're not submitting to a structure because the structure doesn't exist. So what is MTOI? We're trying to create a, hopefully something that's reasonably close to what he intended, okay? The best that we can, structure-wise, okay? And by the way, that's why half the people that leave is because they don't know how to deal with structure. And it has to do with authority, okay? And let's talk about that from another point of view. Well, I'm just preaching, so it's okay. Look, I mean, this is kind of the nice thing. You get in front of a mic, you can say whatever you want, and just let it kind of go wherever it goes. If you're in structure, okay, you think it'd be easy if Moses was here, you just listen to him. Well, they didn't all listen to him, and Moses was there. They didn't all listen to Paul when Paul was there. They didn't all listen to John or Peter or James when they were there. They didn't all listen to Yeshua when he was there. So stop thinking that and kidding yourself that, well, if, you know, you might have been once throwing rocks at him too for eating with the publicans and whatever he was doing, okay? Who knows what you would have been doing like? Because some of you are that judgmental already now. You don't know. But you know what? If you're dealing with Ephesians 4:11 person and that person actually is speaking and a voice of the Almighty and is an authority he placed them in, why would you let peripheral things cause you to leave? Well, I don't like the music. Well, I don't like the way this person preaches. Well, I don't like I don't like your personality. Rabbi's too harsh. Why would any of that bother you? If that person is an actual Ephesians 4:11 person, they're supposed to be doing what they're doing, and Yahweh picked them knowing they would do it that way. Okay? And I know some of you really like my style, whatever it is, but a lot of you don't. And you know what? It shouldn't make a difference. What does that have to do with anything? Look, I certainly don't sound like Elder when he gets up here, and neither of us sounds like Rabbi Tom when he gets up here. Okay, you're getting three very different personalities and ways of speaking. The information's the same. Okay? All right? And so some of you hear me and it triggers some harshness that maybe you got out of a parent. I'm sorry it does that. But it is what it is. Some of you don't like when elder gets up here and it sounds a little bit more, I don't know, churchy from wherever he came from. All right? Rabbi Tom sounds more whatever it is where he came from. We're not from the same places. Okay? We have very different experiences and cultural backgrounds and the way we were raised and everything and what we went through that molded us into our styles. So why should that matter to you? Okay? Well, because it's triggering this and that. Well, get over the triggers. Stop being triggered. You know, of late, we've had, well, of late meaning the last couple of years, we've had a few different people singing and playing doing the praise time. And some of the praise has gotten a little bit more, using the actual English word, charismatic. I don't mean charismatic like church. There's been a lot more energy to it and enthusiasm in it. And some of you are really upset about that. You know what? I could care less because I don't get that way about anything, okay? So it doesn't bother me. It doesn't help me. It doesn't do anything. But I allow it. By the way, that's something you need to understand. If you're going to be under an authority, you have to allow that if they're allowing it, that it's okay. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. They've allowed it. Everything in your life coming from the highest authority in the universe is either caused or allowed by that authority. Well, I don't like that he allows that. Well, then you're not respecting my authority. If you don't like what he allows, then you're not respecting his authority. And he's allowed you to come here, if he has, or caused you to come here so that you could experience these triggering things. Well, it just feels too much like the church I went to. Good, get over it. Okay, get over it. Not everything was wrong with everything people experienced. The teachings had problems. The belief system had problems. But you're going to tell me that it's wrong to get excited about our Creator? Then you have a problem with David. I mean, David danced so wildly his clothes fell off, basically. His wife did not like it, by the way. So for all your ladies who think, oh, my husband always embarrasses me, well, go try to be, you know, Michal. She was not excited about David coming in with the ark, losing his mind. But he lost his mind as bad as any Pentecostal you ever saw. Okay? I mean, he was whirling, twirling, dancing, flying all over the place. He was happy, like, beyond out of control. And I'm not telling you you need to do that. I will never do that. You know why? Because I don't have it. Okay? It's not me. But if it is you, you know, some of you cry during the praise. I never cry during the praise. But that's because it's not me, not because it's wrong. But when the music is playing and the words are getting to you, especially the stuff that Brianna has written of late, I see a lot of tears. That's because it's a natural expression of emotion coming from what's happening. And so if you can't get excited about these things in your own way, trust me, I get excited about these things. It just doesn't look like maybe what you would do. All right? So whenever Elder gets going and he has his hands going, he's like, come on, let's get excited, praise Yah. I do that, I feel like I look retarded doing it, okay? Because it's so out of, it's just not me, right? But it looks natural when other people do it because it's a natural expression. I'd be forcing it, okay? All right? Man, I see some of you when you're praising and your hands will go up or whatever. If I do that, I look like I'm a phony. All right? I didn't come from that place. I don't understand that stuff. It doesn't make it wrong, which is why I allow it. Do you understand? Okay? But at what point are you going to actually look for, find, and then submit to an anointed person? By submit, I mean trust that whatever they're causing or allowing is what you're supposed to be dealing with. I didn't say it was what you're supposed to be doing necessarily, because maybe you don't need to praise that way, but you should allow that other people do, if I'm allowing it. Okay? And I will tell you, I feel just as uncomfortable as some of you, because anything that's not you feels uncomfortable when other people are doing it on some level. But I don't put my comfort level as a priority. Okay? I put right and wrong as a priority. And if I can't find anything wrong with it, I'm not going to have a problem with it, whether I'm comfortable with it or not. So why do you? Okay? A lot of people have gone on and said, well, I don't like the way he yells at us so much, and he's always so loud. That's the style you're going to get from me. By the way, I bet you got that from Paul of you back then. Read his letters. He didn't just sit there going, hey, guys, you know, I really think that maybe you should, you know, it'd be great if maybe you guys would, you know, what do you think? He goes, you idiot Galatians, what is wrong with you? Did I teach you to do these things? Who told you these things? Whoa, okay, Paul. I mean, read what he, you know, some of the strength in what he was saying. And you think, oh, and you think Peter, who's ready to cut an ear off, was going to be all that gentle? That guy was as blue as the day is long. And you're going to get all that strength coming out of that, okay? I mean, what other color is going to say, no, don't wash me, and then say, okay, good, wash me from head to toe? You know, red is going to do that, okay? You know. All right? But he was going to jump in what he thought was wrong. He's the one who told Yeshua to be nice. Don't be nice to yourself. Well, I'm not being mean to myself. What do you say? What's wrong with you? He's like, you know. But you think that you'd love all these guys as your leader, rabbi, pastor, whatever, as whoever's your congregational leader. You think you'd like these guys? You would to some degree, because you like me to some degree. But other parts you wouldn't like. Because we always have a challenge with anything that's different than us. And the more different, the more you're not liking it, because it's uncomfortable. And I, you know, this is part of why you see the rebellions that come. Okay? Not everybody's comfortable with Moses' leadership, and there are always people that want their own leadership. So you have a combination. Guys who want to be in charge, and also guys that are trying to get, because the people rally behind them because they also don't love the leadership structure. You know what Joshua and Caleb did? They loved the structure. They trusted it, believed in it, submitted to it. And Joshua, as you know, elder teaches, he was the armor bearer. He was going to be right there where Moses was over there. He's going to be right over here waiting for him. Okay? He wasn't going anywhere. Moses went up the mountain. I'm standing right here at the bottom waiting for you. Okay? That's a different sort of idea of leadership. And your role in submitting to and being a part of. I don't know. It's just important that we get that, all right? Because that's a big part. Look, this whole Torah portion starts, excuse me, the whole Torah portion starts with structure being put in place. And notice that Yitro had no problem with that Moses would have the ultimate authority. He said, yes, you should be. You're the anointed appointed. You're the one that Elohim called to do these things. So yes. Which, by the way, that's why in this structure, we don't vote, okay? We don't have like a board of elders that decide all these things or whatever. I make all the decisions. I know I don't do it without counsel. I talk to elder almost daily about things I'm about to do. And he often looks at me like, why are you telling me this? Like, you have the authority, just do. Because I want to have a sounding board. So I use him as a sounding board often. Rabbi Tom's not here. I don't do it as often. He works out of the house mostly. But I do with him very often. Then we have our leadership meetings once a month. And I bounce things off of them. Hey, this is some things I'm planning. What are you guys' thoughts about this and that and the other thing? But ultimately, the burden of decisions is on me. Why is it on me? Because I'm the anointed person. I have been given the vision. And so I have a job, a role to protect and make sure that the vision gets implemented. But then people running around kind of trying to tell me how they've got all these visions. Fine, go do something else then. Go take your vision somewhere and share it with somebody. This vision already exists. And you got to decide, are you going to be a part of this vision? Moses had a vision. And in that vision, I'm not saying like a dream. I'm saying he was given an insight of what was, and he said, we are going to the promised land, wherever that is. And we're going to take whatever route he sends us. And we're going to take as long as he tells us to take. And are you a part of that vision or not? And it doesn't say here, but not everybody went with him. There are people that said, the heck with that, I'm done with that, and just whatever. Because remember, the journey from Sinai to the land didn't take 40 years. They went around in all kinds of circles and did all kinds of things because they needed to be not going in for the punishment of the 40 years. It wasn't that long a journey. Okay? Look at how long it took them to get to Sinai. It wasn't even more than a month or two, right? A couple of months and they were at Sinai. And then very quickly they got to the land after that. And then they spied it out and didn't go in. But that was very quick. But are you going to stick it out because you realize that's the one Yahweh's working with? And you do see a lot of them stayed all the way to the end. Okay? Nobody's forced to stay. Same here today. And we do have people leaving all the time. More people, it's not for everybody. Not everybody is up to the challenge of walking this out the way he intended in this very, very real and challenging world we live in. But if you ask for the help, he does give it, and the guidance is there. Look, you should be just to know that not only do you have somebody, several somebodies, but we'll just talk about me for a second, who actually has been given, to whatever degree, insight in understanding this, okay? But you have a leadership that understands life issues. We understand legal stuff you get into. We've got former police officers. We've got people that have training in different things. We have trained people and anointed people in counseling, okay? Finance. I mean, I've been in a lot of ministries where the ministries guys didn't know any of this stuff and couldn't have helped you with any of this stuff. But there's very little that you guys come up with that we don't have somebody who has the qualifications to help you. I mean, that is just a tremendous, and it's only in a few people. So like he gave enough of those gifts to a few people to make sure we can cover so much. You know, and let me tell you something. I know finance, okay? And I've done a lot of that counseling. What a blessing, though, when elders showed up. He understands finance. He's had some training. I then sent him for more training, so he got certified with the Dave Ramsey guys. But he already had training. He'd already run businesses. And so I know what he already knows, and he respects and knows what I know. But, I could have just had that myself till he got here. Okay? And now, he's helping so many of you. And sometimes he'll come to me and ask my opinion on some things. But the thing is, I don't end up having to do that as much. And those are things that we, to be honest, don't really have a mandate as a ministry to do. You know why we do it? Because we're a family. And if you were my children, I would expect you to come to me to help you when your life is all messed up. I'm not talking about just halachic things. The walk, right? If you're struggling with life in some way, I would want you to come to me. My daughter, my son, I want them to come to me. So I'm sort of in that parenting role for the whole group in some degree, with Elder and Rabbi Tom, the three of us kind of together work, in that parenting role, which means that if you guys have lives that are challenged at some moment, you got people to go to who may just have an expertise in what you're challenged with. When I say may, I mean like very likely. There's very few things that we say, sorry, that's just way outside our stuff, and you need to go to see somebody, and we'll guide you. And that's almost always if it's mental health beyond just normal therapy, like normal counseling, or legal things, okay? Or health things, we'll send you to the doctor, right? But those are the only three things that we really don't cover too much, okay? But I don't know that you guys always appreciate that. I know some of you do, the ones who've taken it, I shouldn't say taken advantage, but have actually made use of it. You get it, okay? And that includes, by the way, helping people that are actually doing really well and they don't know what to do with their money. I'm not just saying we help only people that have no money and don't know what to do with their money. We actually have enough experience and understanding to help people that even do have money to tell them, hey, this is some things you might want to do to help, And we don't tell them what to do, by the way. We give them understanding and guidance so they can make their own choices with wisdom, all right? Anyway, just wanted to throw that all out there because I think that it needs to be said, because we have done here and are still doing here what Moses was doing in terms of building a structure. That's what MTOI is. It's a structure like this, right? Oh, my goodness. Let's see. We didn't even get to 19 or 20. All right. We can make this really easy, okay? In chapter 19, we just need to point to one thing. This is, for all of you saying, I'm new covenant, I'm old covenant, this is the covenant. Okay? It's not complicated. It could not be simpler. Okay? In verse 5, it says, and now if you diligently obey my voice, Yahweh's talking, and shall guard my covenant, then you shall be my treasured possession above all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. Okay, he's laying out his expectation for us. It's real complicated. Obey my voice. Diligently. And he says, in return, you shall be my people, a treasured possession above all the peoples. So what is he saying? If you would just trust me enough to obey me, do you trust him enough to obey him? Good teaching, okay? Go listen to that. One part, I think, okay? Not too many of those left. But if we could just trust him enough to obey him, he's saying, I will bless you and take care of everything else. Now, he doesn't detail that out here. He doesn't detail out anything he expects us to do either. The details come later, like in Deuteronomy 28, he explains what the blessings are that he's offering, etc., in lots of ways. But he's simply saying, I mean, we can only imagine being his treasured people above everybody. That sounds pretty good. Okay? And he says, and you shall be to me a reign of priests and a set-apart nation. These are the words you ought to speak to the people. And the people said, everything you said, it will do. Now, that's in verse 8. This is the covenant. And by the way, he hadn't said a thing yet. So I want you guys to understand, you can't get away with or think that it'll work, saying, well, if I'd have known. No, no. He wants you to do this with a blank check. But you're writing a blank check, so to speak, because you know and trust who you are covenanting with. And if you don't understand all this, listen to, I'm sorry to tell you 55 parts, but listen to the Are You Covenanted teaching. Because this is the relationship. Okay? He doesn't want an altar call. He doesn't want just you to believe whatever believing means. He wants you to covenant, which you won't do if you don't believe. So I'm not saying he doesn't want you to believe, but people say, well, I was saved and I'm a believer and I had this and I. But listen, are you covenanted? That's what I want to know. Okay? That's what he wants to know. The relationship he wants with you is called covenant. And the parameters or the expectations, the details of the covenant is that you will do everything he says. And then he promises to take care of everything else. It's not like 400 pages of, you know, small print and stuff. Okay? It's a couple of handful of verses in chapter 19. Now, the rest of the details of it come in the rest of the book. Like the next chapter, he starts giving you some of the things he expects you to do and not do. Because the Ten Commandments comes next in chapter 20. But before he even gives a single commandment, he says, will you diligently, if you would agree, to diligently obey my voice? Now he says, obey my voice. I'm going to tell you right now, I think more and more when he says voice, he's talking about the people that he anoints that you're supposed to listen to, who are speaking his words with authority. It's not just referring, well, his voice is referring to Yeshua. Yes, it is, but not just that. It's referring to the word. Yes, it is, but not that. He didn't just say, obey my words, which he does. He doesn't just say, oh, keep my commandments, which he does say. Here in a couple of other places, he says specifically, you will obey my voice, which is the ones speaking my words. Okay? But you don't want to do that, because that means you have to trust somebody like me, and you don't want to do that for sure. Because I'm a human being, and I'm flawed, and I'm all screwed up and everything else. And you're right, I am. But when you're getting those, when the voice is speaking to you, which means it's his words, it's his words. Okay? By the way, being his voice, and I can tell you this from my own personal experience, doesn't mean that every word that comes out of my mouth 24/7 is his. I say a lot of screwed up things. I say a lot of things that he probably looks at me like, why would I pick this guy? Why in the world did I pick this? This guy is out of his mind. Okay? At least Elder says that out loud sometimes. He goes, you have issues? All right. Which is Elder's way of saying, I can't believe you just said or did whatever you just did. Okay, you've got issues. And I enjoy those moments because I made him laugh that time, okay? But he'll just laugh and say, man, you got issues. And I said, I know. I do. But will you please show me anybody he picked in here that doesn't have issues? I mean, seriously. Moses was a murderer. He was. Okay, David was an adulterer. Okay. Okay, and a murderer. Well, he didn't kill him himself. Moses actually killed somebody himself. Okay, he put the hit out on him. Okay, he put out the contract. But I'm saying is, Peter, you know, had his, you know, issues where he went to go, he tried to cut the guy's head off, missed, cut his ear off. You know, I'm just saying is, everybody had issues. The only one in here without any issues is Yeshua. Everybody else had issues. So, yeah, of course I do. But you have to understand, you cannot expect that that person is 24/7. The words that come out of my mouth are sometimes mine. But when you come to me in the role, you should be expecting it to be his. Okay? And that's really where this gets. And the covenant says, if you diligently obey my voice. So you need to figure out what that means. Even if you just took it as just the words of the Torah, well, you struggle with that too. But also, what you're also struggling with is that without a teacher, you don't understand it fully. Okay, I was talking to someone the other day who's in a prison, and he has only access to the book. He doesn't have teachings. He has no internet. He can't access anything. And he understands pretty good up to a point, but he doesn't have a teacher. Look, I'm sorry to insult anybody, and really I'm not. You're going to take it because you don't understand. He says nothing in this book was meant to be understood completely without guidance. He says that's why he wrote parables. And by the way, he said that he wrote parables in the old and in the new, that everything was him speaking in indirect language, needing interpretation and guidance. Okay? I'm not saying you can't understand, well, it says don't murder. Okay, I get that. I'm not going to murder. It says don't commit adultery. I get that. It says keep the Sabbath. Okay, maybe I need some guidance on that one because what does it mean to keep the Sabbath? Some things are more black and white than others, okay? But when you read through the whole thing without guidance, you cannot possibly understand completely what he's talking about. And that's by design. Not mine. His. Okay? And by the way, I love this role for this one reason. I only understand the level I understand because you guys need it and ask questions, because I don't get what you're, you know, what I give you guys just when I read the book necessarily. But when I'm reading it to get a teaching for you, when I'm reading it to understand it for you, he gives me that insight. I don't get it just reading necessarily. But when I'm working through a teaching and I start looking at like we did with Romans 8 last week, I'm like, oh, okay. Because he tells me and shows me the context and where the missing pieces are, and that, you know, that confusion gets cleared up, and you're like, oh, so simple, okay? And by the way, Elder will tell you that's one of his understandings of anointed appointed. When you can take something that's bothered you your whole life, ask that person a question, they give you a simple answer in 5 minutes, and you're like, oh my gosh, that was so simple, okay? That's because it's him, not me. Him meaning the above, right? Okay? Some of you come with, you think life, you know, overwhelming, challenging things happening in your life, and then you counsel with me, you get an hour blocked out, we finish it in 10 minutes, and Elder's like, did you remember to make your phone call? I said, it's finished. He goes, it's finished? Yeah, because he gives me the insight, we fix the problem, and the person's like, oh, thanks, that's it. It's him, okay? And some of you, when you've counseled, you've seen that. Because some of you come to me and said, I don't know if that made sense what I just said, or you'll say, I don't really know how to word this, and I'll go, don't worry, I got it. And then you're like, that's it. How'd you get that? I don't know. Okay? But when I get it, it's clear as day, and I just get it. I don't know how. Okay? Elder will ask me often after the person's finished counseling, and they, because sometimes we're sitting, most of the time we're together for some of these meetings, and people walk out and look at me like, how did you get that? And I'm like, I don't know. Okay, sometimes I can point to some things maybe, but it's like, well, how did you even piece that together? I don't know. Because I'm not the one doing it. Well, I am, but I'm not. If you understand what I'm saying, he's guiding it. He's giving it the insight, okay? Because you're also meant, as you see here, to go to the vertical structure when you need help with things. But that's because the vertical structure is supposed to give you the words of Elohim. Elohim's right rules. That's what it says here. Nothing has changed. That's my opinion anyway. The structure still is the structure that he's put in place. Now, we're not a cohesive nation like they were, but the need is no different. That's why this is still here. Look, this is why I get into arguments with some people about tithing, and they want to say it's only for the Levitical priests. I said, tithing was done before there ever was a Levite. And then we have to ask the question, what was the purpose of the tithing? And it was to make sure there was full-time people to do this work. Okay? Being available to answer the questions and give the right rulings and do the guidance and do the instructing and do the enlightening to whatever it is that the struggle is. Those people need to be available, and they can't unless there's a way to financially support them. Yes or no? And some of you still don't want to do the tithing, but you want to benefit from the system. Elders often said to me, look, we should look people up and make sure they've given before we help them. Because if you're not supporting, why would we help you? And it's not because of the money part. It's like, if you're not supporting, why should you get support? Okay? But see, we're not that way. We give the help no matter what. You understand? The only screening we're doing now is to make sure that you're not just some random person calling just because you want to ask opinions of 57 ministries, that you're actually a part of the group. And the only reason we're doing that is because I'm becoming more and more Moses-like in terms of busyness. I'm not saying like Moses in any literal way, but there's just getting to be too much and not enough time, so we have to screen that a little bit. So it's getting a little tougher and tougher to make sure there's enough time, okay? I mean, I get 2 whole days a week where that's all I do. Just nothing but standing there waiting for the line of people to ask questions. A lot of times they're phone calls. They could be from anywhere in the world. It could be a Zoom or a WhatsApp, but this is all I do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You know, so by the way, if you're going to call for an appointment, you're going to get one on a Tuesday or a Thursday because those are my 2 days. All right? And so you just need to understand that. Okay? So I'm not going to get into too much details then with the Ten Commandments. They've been covered a million times by everybody. All right? All right. But you need to understand that there is this covenant in 19 that's so important. And actually, the last verse about that is verse 9, where it says, see, I am coming to you in a thick cloud, so that the people hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. There should be some sort of signs in your life interacting with an anointed person that they would believe that person because the signs they know came from above. Things that person couldn't have known or shouldn't have known, insight-wise. I'm not talking about like you went to a card reader and they knew something that whatever. I'm saying that you're dealing with a problem, that person gets the insight that gets right down to the heart of it, understands what you're dealing with, gives that thing that was like, oh my gosh, that fixes it. That I understand it. That's from above. That should help you to believe that person going forward. Okay? And seriously, a lot of you moved here to be here. How could you make that move and not believe that? Like, why would you uproot your whole life? Because, like, it's amazing how many people have done that and then left. I'm like, how could you come here unless you believed that I was at least an Ephesians 4:11 guy? I mean, why would you? Was it that lonely where you were and there just wasn't another congregation? Because that could be it. I'm not mocking that. I mean, there are some people who came here just because they wanted to be with other people. But you came here then for partially the wrong reason, okay? I say partially because it is a good reason to come because you're alone and you want to do this with other people. I get that. But most of the people came here because they believe in what he's doing through me. And so if you're going to come here not believing that, you're not going to end up staying, and then now you don't have anybody because the people that are still here aren't going where you're going, and you're going into nothing. Because if this was even close to what you like, there's nothing out there locally here that's anything like this. So I don't know what your alternatives are, because the two other choices in town are nothing like this. Okay? So what do you end up with? All right? I mean, there are two choices. You can go to one of those. I don't know how after this, but, you know, this is so different. Okay? And so in one, you're going to get a very Christianized version of things. And in the other, you're going to get nothing. I mean, I'm not picking. You're going to get just a group discussion. There's no teaching. Okay? So if you want to just have a chance to talk a lot and just everybody talk a lot and there's no teaching, you can go to one. If you want things to be a whole lot more Christian and sing mainstream Christian songs and all the other stuff, you can go over there. But you moved here because you didn't want all of that. You could have had all of that, but you wanted this. Oh, but I don't like the way you... What's the matter what you like? Okay? I don't understand why that's so important. See, I guess because I don't have any blue. Okay? I don't know why liking something is so important. Okay? Function is, I'm going to say red. Okay? It's function. That's all I care about is function. Okay? I don't care if I like it or not. All right. Anyway, so that's going to cover it for me. It's 10 o'clock already. I hope that was useful to you.